If you would like to support the podcast and get some extra content while you're there, head on over to patreon.com/severeMMApodcast and sign up. From the rewatch to the Q&A, we will have loads of content every week. So sign up, patreon.com/severeMMApodcast. And now, here's the podcast.
Graham McDonald is an idiot.
Sean Sheehan of severeMMA.com. He even has the audacity to call himself the quote-unquote pod god.
This is Severe MMA.
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 The Severe MMA podcast is finally here.
Welcome to the Severe MMA podcast. Here's your host, Sean Sheehan.
Welcome, welcome everybody. It's episode 465 of the Severe MMA podcast. I struggle to say that number every week now. Just because it's becoming an untenable amount of podcasts that we have done so far. But we have a new, not new, well, somewhat new podcast this week that's also coming back. It is the State of the UFC Address, and who better to have on the State of the UFC Address, the OG, the man with the greatest knowledge of the UFC roster from top to bottom, Spencer Kite. Spencer, how are you today? Thank you very much for being on. I can't wait for this. We came out from a massive weekend. No UFC the weekend here when this is being released, but there's the State of the UFC is always a great thing to talk about. How are you?
I'm well. You threw up the bat signal yesterday. I responded right away that I'm always available to you for these. I love them. I adore them. And 465 is a hell of an accomplishment. Congratulations to you and the lads.
I've never missed a week, actually, either. Do you know that? Every single week.
I do, because I know you're a psycho.
I am a psycho.
And I appreciate that, because I am too.
True to coronavirus, true bad backs, true pure sicknesses, true people dying, true everything. Last week was a struggle, I'll tell you. My Chrome updated in the middle of the podcast, and which never happens because I'm religious about turning off my updates. I ate something real bad. I was sick and I was like, Graham, I need to run. I paused in the mouth. So last week's podcast took about fucking 3 hours to record. Let's hope this podcast does, well, although you say to the UFC, I'm not going to jinx it now because it does take an awful long time. So let's just get into it. Spencer, it's very hard to ask you the question, what's the state of the UFC right now, like days after UFC 300? Because I don't feel like you, me, any MMA fan in the world has our head back together yet to give a genuine answer to that question. And if we are, we're probably not a real MMA fan, because that was just fucking brilliant. I forgot about all the Apex shows. I forgot about all the prelims that we've been, you know, fucking brainlessly walking dead getting through for the last fucking 6 months, because that was just so amazing. How do you feel? Like, how do you feel after that? That's you, someone who's kind of baked into the UFC and covers every single bit of it. Do you, like my son and Graham were talking about in the podcast, like, it still makes us feel. It takes a lot. It takes a lot. What about you? Does that still make you feel?
Yeah. So, I mean, Saturday was one of those days where around 1 o'clock, I started getting the like excitement, the tingles of excitement of, okay. And I still kind of have a bit of a routine when I'm home watching fights and covering fights here, even similar to what I do when I'm, you know, sporadically on the road. And it's, you know, make sure you get the shower in, you get some food in, you get rested so that, cause it's a haul, like watching fights is a haul. And so around 1 o'clock, I started getting the excitement going. And by 2:30, when I'm sitting down in my office and I've got everything up and open and prepped out and ready to go, and I send the, you know, first email to the team at UFC.com that I'm going to be working with all night saying, let's have a good night, enjoy it. It felt special. And I mean, we're 72 hours removed and I'm still kind of buzzing and smiling and smirking. And every time I think about Max Holloway knocking Justin Gaethje out at the buzzer and, you know, the fight in four parts of Zhang Weili and Yan Xiaonan, like it's just, I mean, Alex Pereira clowning on people, like, I'm still just in awe, and I'm still just like, I think I tweeted something out during the show of like, there were really people that were down on this thing. Like there were really people that were whinging about the lineup of this. And I know that part of it was, there's not this massive superstar at the top, but like the collection of this, I just saw a comment on my post-fight prognostications in terms of matchmaking over on Sportsnet saying, questioning that I called it the greatest collection of fights or greatest collection of talent ever assembled. And it's like, really? You're going to look at a fight card with 12 former champions and incoming Kayla Harrison and all the stuff that we saw, one of the better prospects in the sport, and Bo Nickel, and be like, yeah, but these guys aren't going to be remembered and people don't know. Go away. Just go away. If you're that guy on Monday morning, go away. I'm still over here riding high. I don't need your negativity. It was absolutely electric. It was everything we wanted. There's no taking away from that card. It was a absolute walk-off home run.
See, I'm that guy 2 Monday mornings before the fights. I decided on the weekend of fights, I'm like, why would you be negative about this? Right? Because, okay, we've all had problems with the card. Like, okay, we didn't get that special, you know, Brock Lesnar type of fight. We didn't get the shock, or we didn't get the superstar on the card, which is grand. Like, when they promise the best card of all time and they don't deliver maybe those two things, I think it's fair game. But, like, that's fair game a month before it, or two weeks before or something. But when you're previewing that card, if you go with anything but positivity, you're a fucking idiot. Or if afterwards, if it's anything but positivity. And, like, it's weird as well, right? Because I don't think it was the greatest card of all time, right? But it was probably top 15, probably top 10, maybe top 5 or whatever. If we complain about that, we're fucking Egypt again, right? So, but that's right. It's not a conversation for, like, no, that's a conversation for the end of the year or the end of the decade or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So, like, it's weird because me being me, right, I need to say that because I can't let it pass. I can't let my belief pass without saying, and not here, but on the podcast at the weekend, because a lot of people were saying, I'm like, and also, like, the Max Holloway knockout, oh, the greatest knockout of all time. I mean, it's not. It's not the greatest knockout of all. It's a great knockout. It's probably the knockout of the year. But you can't beat Jackie and Buckley because Ang and I, like, you're not beating that. Like, you're not, you know, a big right hand to knock someone's spark out is brilliant, right? It was a little bit like the Leon Edwards one as well. It's like, that's a great knockout. That's not a greatest knockout of all time. Like, that's a straight head kick. It was a beautiful knockout. Well, like, it's not a vaulted spinning wheel kick. Like, it's just,
That's the one that always comes to me. Yeah. I'm Edson Barbosa is still top of my list.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
Personal preference, like, that is, they showed it a couple of times on Saturday, and every time I see it and I see poor Terry Adam just lock up and start falling backwards, I shake my head.
Do you know what? It's great. It's great that we can have this discussion, and it's great that do you know what I kind of love? And I love that there's another fight or another knockout or another event added to the discussion. And then we can think of all the great ones from back in the day. And I love it. Like, that's brilliant. I think that's something we need to, we need to adore, really. We need to embrace, and we need to think more of. Because I remember for a long time there, like, especially when events were coming to Ireland at the start, and you do a Q&A, everyone would be asking, like, oh, what's your main card going to be? Like, make out your main card. And if it happened again, it'd probably be the same thing. But, like, we don't necessarily have that anymore because we have so many events. I think that's sort of the way of getting back to it, you know, and it's just good, clean fun. Like, it's your, you know, your Monday morning radio type of sports talk sort of fun. And what's wrong with that? Absolutely not wrong with that at all. So let's get into the state of the UFC, and we're going to go division by division. But first of all, I want to start with the women's divisions and just women's MMA in the UFC in general, obviously, because it's been a great time for women's sports. That, like, there's been a massive explosion, you know, with Caitlin Clark over in the US, but, you know, women's soccer in Europe and other sports as well has taken a massive explosion. But it's funny because the UFC, that has happened years ago, and I feel like it's very different for MMA and for the UFC because it's more accepted, and we don't really look at it as a separate part of the sport, whereas in other sports, they kind of do. But maybe it's worthwhile kind of doing that here, because I actually, funnily enough, think we're at a weird time in women's MMA that, like, Amanda Nunes has gone away. Valentina Shevchenko is no longer the champion and won't be fighting for another 5 months. You know, Zhang Weili put on not a great performance, I suppose, last weekend. And, you know, Rosanam Yunus is not a champion at the moment. She lost, not her last fight, but the fight before it. And it feels like we're very much you know, Raquel Pennington is a champion. And with all due respect to Raquel Pennington, she's not, you know, she has lost to some of the best people in the division. She's not a massive star. It feels like we're at kind of an interim phase of the women's divisions as a whole at the moment. And I suppose it's unfair to put them as a whole, but there's so few of them, I think maybe we can just for this discussion. Is this the case of we just need a few results going the right way? Or is this a case of something maybe more serious? Have we kind of, has some of the best talent, has the best talent of a generation kind of come to the end and we're struggling to get more great talent? What do you think, Spencer?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, right? We've seen so many transcendent fighters and transcendent moments happen in the previous 8 to 10 years that now we're just at that point where Ronda's gone. Chris Cyborg is still around, but kind of on the fringes right now. We're not sure where she's fighting. She obviously jumped out on Twitter and said, I think it's maybe time for me to try a test cut, which made me chuckle because there were a number of years where everybody wanted you to make a test cut for a gigantic fight and you didn't want to. As you said, Amanda Nunes is retired. Ronda's long gone. Holly Holm is certainly at the tail end of things. And so we're in that position right now where I think we're sort of lacking that marquee star. Valentina Shevchenko, as great as she was, as dominant as she was, didn't really take that full next step. She always felt to me like a second tier star, not that headline, bright light superstar. Probably that she should have been, given everything that she is and does and accomplished. We certainly don't have that at bantamweight in Amanda's absence. And Zhang Weili is as dominant as she has been at times. That belt is sort of kicked around a few times. And so it's hard to really build that momentum. Now she has an opportunity here potentially to go on a little run. And we've also had some, you know, terrible luck with Tatiana Suarez, who looked for a number of years like she was going to be an absolute can't-miss, surefire champion and person to probably carry that division. She can't seem to stay healthy. She still may get healthy and get a title shot next, but who knows where that goes. And so, yeah, I think it's just sort of that spot where we're waiting for the next wave to get there. I look at flyweight, and we'll certainly get division by division, and I have hope for the future because there's a bunch of, you know, athletes that are 28 and under that are showing promise, that are on the rise. Obviously, we just saw Erin Blanchfield. Yes, she lost a fight, but she's 24, right? Tons of future. And there's a bunch of other athletes behind her that all show some of that promise. And so I think it's a matter of just kind of, this is the shallow point, and eventually the tide will roll back in and we'll be going, oh, remember when we were thinking that strawweight was a little stale and it was a little this and it was a little that, and we weren't sure about fly. We'll get there. I'm not sure about bantamweight. That's always been one that has felt like it's going to come in real, real different waves, where we had the Ronda period, where we had a ton of great athletes in through to Holly and then Misha and then Amanda and even some of the challengers that she faced. But we're at a bit of a lower point right now with that division, but we also had somebody on Saturday that, you know, made an instant impact and has the potential to carry that division really for as long as she wants, should she get that opportunity before the year is out.
I think it's interesting. Before we get to bantamweight, maybe let's start with strawweight and flyweight. I think for flyweight, the contender, or the young, I suppose, prospects that we talked about, you know, a year ago or 18 months ago, that you just kind of mentioned there for the strawweight division, have kind of come true at flyweight. And you look at flyweight and you think that's kind of the division you would want. Obviously, it took a bit of a step back there when Erin Blanchfield lost, but it took a step forward with Manon Fiorot winning at the same time, I think. Although that fight was, I don't know, that was a worrying fight. It just wasn't a great fight in terms of quality, I don't think. But at the same time, that sometimes happens when two good fighters fight each other. But you still have, you know, you have Rose now coming through after winning her last fight. Andrade again, back on a winning spree. But then you have, you know, like the likes of Natalia Silva, Amanda Ribas, you know, Tracy Cortez, Ariana Lipsky, what a run she's been on over the last while. So you have a lot of people who I think, look, if they won three fights in a row, would anyone be that surprised if they were the next in line, let's say this time next year or whatever? I don't think there is a good few, and I think it's I think it's a very balanced division in that way. We'll talk about bantamweight in a second, but I don't know, do I see that in strawweight? There's a lot of names there that's kind of, you know, the Amanda, Amanda Ribas, Amanda Lemos, Marina Rodriguez, Mackenzie Dern, Lupi Godinez, Tabitha Ricci. They kind of, maybe they win one and they lose one, or they win three and they lose one. Is there anyone you see coming through there that maybe can break into that top 15? Are younger fighters even, or is there anyone in the top 15 that might have maybe mischaracterized there that you think is on a running spree and could be close?
I mean, the one that we're sort of waiting on that is to me the most wait and see is, and I mentioned her already, Tatiana Suarez.
Of course,
right? Yeah. She just, if she can stay healthy, everything we've seen, undefeated, 10-0, tremendous grappling skills, strong, athletic, all the elements to be a potential champion, but she just can't stay healthy. She had knee surgery a couple of weeks ago. She's going to be out still for a couple of months. She anticipates a relatively quick return, but she just can't seem to keep going forward whenever she gains some momentum. Outside of her, it's, to me, I think you nailed it, right? It's a bunch of athletes that have either gotten their opportunity and come up short, or haven't been able to get to that point where they get their opportunity. I think Lupi Godinez had her shot against Verna Jandiroba a couple of weeks ago, stumbled in that one. Verna Jandiroba is somebody that, like, is really underrated in terms of how good she is, what she's done in the UFC, the results she's put forward, but you're not super excited by her. She is a suffocating grappler with middling striking. And so if you put her in there with Zhang Weili, and she's close to being in the mix for a championship fight at this point, given the dearth of challengers and sort of the number of people that Zhang Weili has already beaten. So she's close. I don't foresee it going all that differently than some of these other fights, some of these last two fights for Zhang Weili did. And so that sort of lessens some of the excitement. There's not a young fighter in that division that gives me a ton of hope. I mean, Jillian Robertson has looked good at times, but she's been inconsistent. Somebody like Yasmin Haragwi has had good moments, but also got knocked the hell out not that long ago by Denise Gomes, who then, you know, goes up and fights Angela Hill in a fight that's probably a little too soon. But it's just a division where, like, you and I on these, and you boys and all of us, you know, all the years doing previews, always said that it often feels like seven fights eight, and then eight goes to seven, and seven goes to eight, and we don't really move too far forward. That kind of feels where we're still stuck at strawweight. And after a bunch of years where it was a lot of really talented top end talent that was trading that belt back and forth and passing it around, we've sort of lost that and are left with Zhang Weili has already fought most of them. And I'm not sure where we go next.
It's almost like, you know, sometimes a lot of the time we dread rematches, you know, but it felt here almost like if Rose Namajunas had stayed, fought Zhang Wei, Zhang Weili indeed, it would have left Yan Zhonan maybe next. They could have done that as like a big card in a big card in China. And the rest of the division, like maybe Suarez would get back, or maybe Jandiroba could go and win a few more, or maybe Andrade would fight her way back. But as you said now, right, she could fight Jandiroba next. And, like, you know, I was going to ask you who's, you know, and you gave it to me, like, who's the name? Like, that probably is the name. And, like, is that the name yet? And probably not. But as I said, happens in all divisions.
I think it's her or Jessica Andrade, and the Andrade rematch is a little bit compelling because the first fight lasted, I think, 46 seconds, and
yeah.
Jess did what Rose had done in going to Brazil. She went to China to face her and lost on Zhang Weili's home turf, and I can see a compelling argument for doing that rematch, but I also remember last year where Jessica Andrade lost three times, and so as much as I enjoyed the pairing between Rose Namajunas and Amanda Ribas, even if you had done that fight at strawweight, it then produces a contender, as opposed to doing it at flyweight, where Rose is going to automatically be a fight behind Manon Fiorot because she lost handily in Paris last year. And while I understand Rose making her own case and stumping for herself, as she should, after beating Hibas, you're not skipping Manon Fiorot. She beat you 6 months ago. And so you're fighting to be number three in the division. And that just seemed like a mistake. And in terms of the calculus of getting her another title shot, if you had done it at strawweight, you might be fighting for a title against a woman that you've already beaten twice.
It seemed like just a very odd decision. And like, our mutual friend, Harry Paul would give out to us for talking about weight cutting or advocating
for weight cutting. Yes.
I just don't feel like she's the biggest woman in the world. Like, and I feel like she can get there. So I would never advocate for it unless I thought that was the case. But it just felt like an odd move. And maybe it was Harry said it to me, or maybe it was Graham said it in the podcast. I can't remember who it was, but like, or maybe it was even Ian, I don't know. I've done so many podcasts, I can't remember. But they were kind of like saying, maybe she doesn't want to be the champion at the moment. And like, that kind of makes more sense from a mental point of view, but it's still, what are you doing? What are you doing in the UFC if that's the case? It's funny because like, those divisions probably need what Bantamweight has just gotten in terms of Manna from Heaven, Kayla Harrison. I call her the queen consort at the weekend. You know, the queen elect, whatever you want to call her. It feels like she's the champion in the division right now. And we're all kind of just waiting for when she can get the fight to win it. And that's weird considering she fought for 7 minutes or whatever it was at the weekend. And I want to mention this as well before we get into any of this. I want to give respect to Raquel Pennington because, like, she didn't get enough for myself and other people included for winning that title and for just the stick-to-itiveness she's had throughout her career to be a top-rated fighter in that division all the time. And, like, sometimes, look at Daniel Cormier, like, waited around until the clearly better fighter than him left and then they became the champion. They kind of took up that mantle. Sorry, I had to do it.
So many other potential examples, and you knew that the stray was going right for DC.
It's true.
Bullet was going right to Cormier.
It's true.
So many other examples of champions abdicated or left or got bounced, and you go right to Cormier.
It's true. It was the most honest example that I could remember. But look, fair play there. It's weird because, like, Juliana Pena might be next, but Juliana Pena is like, it could be a good fight, but it's more like her terrible trash talk and like her weirdo personality. I'm like, do you really want to see that? Like, one person I'd love to see getting back just based on what they did last time is Irina Aldana. I thought her last performance was so good, and I don't know, if it was a man, you'd call it balls to put on a performance like that after that last. I could not have more respect for her, but to put on a performance like that. But it's all kind of up in the air, right? And here's the question I want to ask you, because, like, you know, we know the rest of the division not great. Do they just go straight in and go, look, let's stop, let's stop the pretense here. Just put Kayla Harrison right in. Give her Raquel Pennington next. And look, if Raquel Pennington beats her, she beats her. But if she doesn't, let's just be realistic here. Kayla Harrison is the one everyone should be shooting for. Is that what they should do?
So I'm working on a huge piece on Raquel Pennington. So all of the timing of this is great. I spoke to her last week. I spoke to her coach, Justin Houghton, today. I think what you said to start there of Raquel didn't get the recognition she deserves for the stick-to-itiveness. That's the reason I'm putting this story together, right? 10 years in the UFC, all the myriad injuries she's been through, just continued to turn up and do what she needed to do to win. Whether you liked the performance, didn't like the performance, think she's, you know, not the highest level of talent, she's got gold on her mantle. And she deserves credit for that. She went out and gutted out a terrible week in Toronto and did what she needed to do to win championship gold. We've seen loads of people go out there and shit the bed in big moments when they're not feeling well, when stuff's stacked against them, and she rose to the occasion. So she gets all the credit in the world. One of the things she and I talked about, and we said, as we were talking, we talked before UFC 300, and we talked about Kayla, right? Because Raquel was asked about her, and she said, look, I'm not afraid of anybody. I'll face anyone. I welcome the challenge. As someone that's been here for a long time and had to work really hard to get to where I got to, I think it kind of sucks if somebody comes in and wins one fight and they go, Yep, front of the line. Okay. But she absolutely manhandled Holly Holm. And what are we doing? Like, this is, with all due respect to Juliana Pena, and I think I said it on Saturday of like, maybe before the fight, maybe during the fight, Juliana Pena needs to get cleared yesterday and announce tomorrow that she's going to fight Raquel Pennington. Because every day that goes that fight doesn't get announced is a day closer to Raquel Pennington defending the title against Kayla Harrison. Because you don't turn in that kind of performance, have a 17-1 record with all the accolades she has, and say whatever you want to say about the level of competition in PFL and fighting up in divisions and different things like that. This is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist who has been a legitimate world-class athlete for the majority of her life, for the majority of time she has been on God's green earth. You don't do that to Holly Holm that impressively, that definitively, and then be told, now stick around and face someone else. You just book that fight. Strike while the iron's hot. I understand Raquel wanting to, you know, make sure somebody that's had their place and had their time gets their opportunity. You can't pass this one up. I would not be surprised if it ends up being on that International Fight Week event as a co-main event or the first of 3 championship fights or 3 big fights with Conor and Michael Chandler in the main event. It's just, you have to do it. You have to.
And that's a good segue, because next I want to talk about Conor McGregor, because it feels every time we've done this podcast for the last 2 years, it's been like, we talk about all the divisions and at the end we might throw in a Conor, we might throw in a Nate, we might throw in a John Jones previously or whatever. But now that he's official, it's back. I feel like, it's weird, run an Irish MMA podcast and you feel almost bad about talking about the greatest Irish fighter of all time, you know? But we need to do it now. And let's do it, because I'm excited about it. It's good to see Conor back. Like, it's good. It was good to see John Jones back. If Ronda was coming back, it'd be good to see Ronda. I love, like, the kind of the legends of our sport that you feel like could have a little bit more left. And maybe Ronda is not the case in that one. But I do think Conor could have a little bit more left. I'm looking forward to seeing it. And do you know what? I don't think it's the right matchup. I think the timing is weird. I have a lot of problems with it. I think it's just so wrong to be putting him back in against Michael Chandler like this. But at the same time, I've said it for years, the UFC are going to put Conor into a fight like this. Conor is going to take a fight like this because he has such self-belief. Even though he talks all the time about, you know, readjusting the competition and everything like that, it's only, what, 2.5 months away now. He's only known 100% about it for a couple of weeks. I know he's been training. We're 4 months into the month now. He's probably been training for 2 of those months very hard, maybe for the last month consecutively. And in January, I know he trained very, very hard as well. But he's always training, but like in kind of a camp style training position. I still am very unsure whether it'll be enough. I don't think it will be. If it was someone else, if it was a lower down maybe opponent and they need another camp to fight Chandler, I'd be more excited in terms of could he win the fight. Now I'm not sure about that, but that's maybe a very isolated perspective there. What's your perspective on Conor coming back? First of all, are you excited? Because I'm sure not everyone is. And second of all, what do you think about the second part of what I said there in terms of getting ready for, and in terms of Chandler and the matchup as well?
So I'm excited because Conor obviously brings eyes. He brings energy. Him being around is just, it's a different kind of energy around the fight week, around the sport as a whole. A bunch more people pay attention, and I'm all for every individual on the roster benefiting from the increased attention. I'm less interested from a, like, personally getting the opportunity to see him compete again. He'll be 36 in July. He hasn't fought since July 2021, coming off the injury, hasn't looked anywhere close to what he was, and not that I expect him to be what he was at his heyday, but it just hasn't been the same. And so there's a little bit of me that's probably preemptively feeling sad already that this is going to go the way that it always tends to go in this sport, where, you know, the legends can't be legends forever. They're legends based on what they did in the past, and the present is often a little bit shaky. I'm glad this is the fight, because we had all the buildup to it. I know not as many people pay attention to the Ultimate Fighter and whatnot as I do, but you told us this was the fight. We have to get this fight. There's other ones that I think could have made more money, could have been bigger sells. One of those people is no longer in the UFC, Nathan Diaz. He's got a boxing match coming up that he's going to go and do, but told us on the weekend that a third fight with Conor is absolutely assuredly going to happen at some point. I would still like to see that one, because that one's fun and interesting to me. I think you're right about the, it would be really nice if he got a warm up, if he got a litmus test fight, if he got a let's see where you're at fight. You and I both know he's not wired that way. There's no part of that man that is going to, hey, let me get in there with Drew Dober and just make sure that I'm ready to go. Let me get in there with Neil Magny and just see where I'm at and get some of the rust off after, you know, close to 3 years by the time the end of June runs around. He's not built like that. And so it's Michael Chandler, and I'm going to knock you out. I'm in the best shape ever, and I'm going to get back, and then we'll see, right? Because one thing we know about Michael Chandler is he ain't going anywhere, easily at least, and he's going to be right in your face trying to give you hell. So Conor better be as sharp and as prepared as he can be, because we know Michael Chandler will be.
I mean, like, I think Michael Chandler for prime Conor McGregor is easy pickings, to be honest. I think
100%. If this was 5-6 years ago, dialed in, locked in, like, I still maintain, right? I like doing the go back and stick the pin in when you want to send people back to, when they start doing the, yeah, how good was that person anyways? Madison Square Garden UFC 205 is my marker for Conor McGregor. Go back and watch that. He was the best fighter on the planet that evening.
100%.
That dude clobbers Michael Chandler, but he's not that dude anymore.
No, and I 100% agree. And I wonder, can he get closer? Because I feel like if he can get close to it and win a few fights, he could get even closer to it, if you want to put it that way. But the biggest problem for Conor is winning those few fights and getting that run, and the UFC allowing him to have that run. You know, we know he's only two fights left in his contract. We know, you know, maybe he wants to fight out those two fights and go elsewhere. You know, you never know how things are going to pan out, though. But, like, I'm less excited about that part of it than just the fights. Like, I feel like, and I've said this to Conor, I interviewed him, I goes, you know, we were robbed of your prime, basically. And it was, a lot of it was his own doing, because he went and fought Floyd Mayweather for an unmerciful amount of money. And, you know, you can't deny him that. But still, it's sad, like, to me that we did, one of the greatest fighters of all time, we lost years of their career. It'd be the same if it was John Jones, which it was, I suppose, but, or Anderson Silva or Khabib Nurmagomedov, which I suppose, again, we have been robbed of that as well. But it's equally as sad, and, you know, that's gone now. Can he get it back? As I said, I don't think so, but I would love to see him be able to put on a bit of a run and win a few fights and bring us back that excitement, because we all know, anyone who experienced those 11 months, you know, between Jose Aldo and Eddie Alvarez, that is the apex of MMA. It's never been like that another time, for excitement and disbelief and everything like that. You know, you had the Max Holloway Justin Gaethje fight multiple times in the space of 11 months, and it'd be great to get that back. So, you know, while at the same time, again, it's Conor McGregor, and he brings a lot of legal issues, and he brings a lot of ethical issues, and he brings a lot of, you've very, very, logical reasons to hate him as well with it. So if anyone doesn't want to tune in because of that, you know, they're dead right in their own opinion. But we'll see how it goes. Let's talk about some of McGregor's former division. That's our featherweight, because obviously I just mentioned Max Holloway. It looks like he wants to go back down and fight Ilya Topuria. The fact that Poirier and Makhachev are fighting at lightweight seems to only embolden that, I think, because I think the three fights that were made most sense for Max were Topuria, Poirier, and Makhachev coming out of the win at the weekend. And obviously two of those fights have now gone away because of the matchmaking, so it has to be Topuria next, in my opinion. Do you think it will be Topuria next? Do you think that's the way it will go, or do you think there's something else happening for featherweight and Max?
So your colleague and my dear friend, Mr. Harry Powell, and I exchanged some voice notes this morning talking about this. He wrote a fabulous spotlight on Max Holloway for severemma.com. Go check that out on Monday. I wrote, in talking about what should be next for Max on Sportsnet, that I think it will be featherweight. I think it will be Topuria, but I don't know that that's the right decision. It feels a little short-sighted to me. As I said to Harry in the voice note I sent him earlier today, don't make any decisions until June 1st has come and gone. Let's see what happens in the lightweight title fight. Let's just see. We can all sit here and say, yeah, Islam's probably going to beat Dustin Poirier. Very reasonable assumption, very safe wager if you want to invest in that. We understand why. But if Dustin Poirier goes out and beats Islam Makhachev and takes that title, I know I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Dustin Poirier, Max Holloway 2 at Madison Square Garden in November for the undisputed lightweight title, where Max is coming off of this performance at UFC 300 and has moved up properly. It's not a relatively short notice fight like their first one. And everybody's a little bit older. Everybody's a little bit wiser. I would like to wait and see, because the thing for me with him going back down is that it feels like there's limited returns. Ilya Topuria, and you would be able to speak to this better than me, being that you're in Europe and I am not, feels like he's already on the rocket ship to stardom. Like the amount of press, the amount of coverage, the amount of just gravity he is pulling in Spain as the new champion feels like we're already on the way there. And so I understand wanting to affix somebody like Max Holloway to him coming off of this moment. It makes that fight in the moment even bigger. But if Ilya Topuria goes out and blows Max Holloway out of the water, or even just beats him, what Max Holloway just did at UFC 300 is now muted. He can certainly go back up and say, well, I beat Justin Gaethje, so I'm right back in the mix. But he's coming off a loss again. So for me, it would be just sit tight, see what happens in Newark, New Jersey, see who walks away with the title, and then make your decision. We don't need to book Ilya Topuria yet. He fought in February. We can wait to see what we're going to do a little bit further down the line with that, would be my approach to things.
I understand that, but I almost think it's maybe win-win is not the right way to put it here, but like, if Max was to lose that fight, right, you're going to have the ability to move back up, and you're going to have, look, probably Poirier coming off of a loss for that BMF title again. What a fight that would be. People wouldn't care about what happened before that. You might even have Conor coming off of a loss. And what a fight that would be. He'd love to fight for that BMF title, I'm sure. And there's that built-in storyline there again. So I think, you know, I you look at a guy like Max Holloway, right? And you could plot out the next 18 months for him with the guys I just mentioned there and maybe throw in a few more. But that would mean that he's like almost stepping away from the title picture. And I don't think that's how he's built. I think, we saw it at the weekend, Max Holloway is built to take on the biggest and boldest and best challenges. And at the moment, you know, with Islam obviously fighting soon, and we know when Islam fights soon, he won't be fighting again for another year. So Topuria is that guy right now. And I understand what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with it even, but do you know what? I don't think either of us care. We just want to see Max Holloway fighting again. And
to be clear, whatever Max Holloway does, I'm good with. I'll be watching. He gets to call his shots, and I'm not going to sit here and be like, now, Max, do what you got to do, brother. You looked spectacular on the weekend. Go fight anybody. I would personally just say I'd rather have Max Holloway fighting any of those guys you named, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, for the BMF belt, coming off that performance where he claimed it, stamped it, threw it in his backpack, and started his travels again to defend it off that victory, as opposed to going back down to a division where he's looked good but not great in his last couple, and he's already got an 0-3 record against the guy that just got knocked off. And so it feels like it would create a bit of a potential chaos situation at featherweight that I don't think we need to get into when we got this really impressive looking 27-year-old that's undefeated and trying to break through as a foundational piece for the company going forward.
If we look at the divisions in featherweight and lightweight, I feel like lightweight has it good at the moment. Like, it's Gaethje losing was obviously big because, like, he was the obvious next guy. But look, Poirier has come into that spot now. Oliveira losing also is, I suppose, big. But they have Saryukin and Gamrat now, two guys coming through. Chandler is next in the rankings. Look, obviously, he is a massive fight. You could very well see the winner of that maybe being next in line. So there's plenty there. At featherweight, it's a little bit different, though, because, you know, you had, obviously, the Ortega-Rodriguez thing, and Ortega put himself in line there, I suppose, if it's not going to be Max next. Who did I say? Someone mentioned a Volkanovski fight the other day. Oh, what was the fight? But look, you could put Volkanovski in there with many guys. There is Ivloyev. Oh, Volkanovski and Aljamain Sterling. I think that's a great fight. I love that fight. But Ivloyev is obviously on a run there as well. And maybe he's the only one maybe in that division like the other two I mentioned in lightweight. So I suppose we're kind of set for the next while in both those divisions. Tell me beyond that, Spencer, who is the next guy coming through? Who's maybe the 30th ranked guy who's 2-0 in the promotion or something, either in lightweight or featherweight, who you think could be next?
So we'll get to a couple of those guys in a minute, but this is the, I am now identifying myself as the president of the Diego Lopez fan club.
Okay.
I am driving the bandwagon. He will be ranked as of tomorrow. And that boy is somebody that I want to see get all the big fights, get all the opportunities. Because let's just see, you win 3 straight fights in roughly 90 seconds each. Step up in competition, give him somebody in the top 10, and let's just see what happens. Because he blew through Sadiq Youssef, who is a tough out, who's a good fighter, who is deserving of his place in the top 15, and he trounced him. So get him in there with Josh Emmett. Get him in there. I know he was calling for a rematch with Ivloyev. I would certainly pay to see that again, because he fought him on 4 days' notice off the couch and made him work for every inch of that victory. That is a dude that feels like right now you give him every opportunity to keep building on this momentum. I think lightweight's a little still in that weird spot that it constantly gets stuck in. And this is the thing. This is the end product of what you and I talked about for a couple of years now on this program, and you have always talked about, where those three guys at the top were just kind of moving around and facing one another, and they were each getting cycled into championship opportunities. Everybody got to fight Khabib, then everybody got to fight Charlie Olives, and then everybody was fighting each other, and none of the other young guys and emerging guys were really coming up, to where now we have Armin Saryukin, feels like the next in line correct guy, Max notwithstanding. And then it feels like, okay, we could certainly do Gamrot, but I would love to see him fight and beat somebody in the top 5 before he gets that opportunity. He looked good against RDA. He has a win over Saryukin. Close fight, competitive fight, fun fight. But he just doesn't feel to me yet like a guy that is really stamped that championship ability. And so I would love to see sort of a little bit more movement. Some of these other guys start working their way forward. In terms of younger, maybe not as much experience, but looking okay, unfortunately, there's not a ton of guys that feel to me right now like championship caliber. I mean, I'm certainly interested in Manuel Torres, who just goes out and knocks people out and is a wild man and slings hammers all the time. Always want to see him fight. Mateusz Rumbetsky has looked very good, going 3-0 in the UFC. The Long Island combo of Charlie Campbell and Nazim Sadikov have both looked good, but I don't think they're necessarily in that contender ability at lightweight. And the same sort of holds true at featherweight, right? There's some people that are interesting that I want to see more of. Fernando Padilla looked amazing last time out. Let's see more growth and development from him. Mentioned Diego Lopez. Muhammad Naimov has looked good. Comes off a reasonable win against Nathaniel Wood last time out. Close fight, competitive fight, all of those things. But he's looked good. But there's not really anybody that jumps out to me as here's the hot prospect that 2 years from now is going to be knocking on the door of the top five. We don't have that right now. And I'm interested to see if somebody can come along, because we know somebody comes along, right? A year ago, Diego Lopez wasn't in the UFC. He was fighting outside of the promotion. He was coaching Alexa Grasso and training in Lobo and all of those things. And he just happened to raise his hand in New Jersey.
Paul Hughes.
And here we are.
Paul Hughes.
Listen, you want to give me Paul Hughes. You want to give me Jordan Vucinich. Absolutely. Bring him in. Two guys that absolutely instantly become, this is going to get interesting, right? Because we've seen 100%. It a little bit with Morgan Charrier. I know he lost last time out. Again, close fight. This is sort of the way some of his biggest fights go, is they're competitive and he lands on the wrong side of things. But both of those guys have beaten Morgan Charrier. So bring them in. Absolutely. I'm here for it. Give them opportunities.
Here's a quick quiz for you, Spencer, right? There's a few guys in the lightweight division at 3-0, right? But there's only one person in the lightweight division with a better undefeated record than in the UFC. Who is it?
That's better than 3-0?
Yeah. In terms of undefeated. So like obviously he's lemon's like 14-1 or whatever, but there's right. only one better undefeated fighter.
I mean, I don't even have to look. I don't even have to cheat. I know who it is. Yeah, and I'm just going to do this.
Who's that now? Who's he?
You guys, we're not recording this for video, but I'm doing the Patty Pimblett hand dance.
It's
moving. To heads will roll.
It's moving.
It is Patty the Batty.
I think McGregor versus Pimblett was a fight they should have made, to be honest. But he beat Tony Ferguson last time out. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do next with Paddy Pimblett. Drew Dober was the talk, and I think it's going to be Drew Dober next, which is bad, bad news for Paddy Pimblett. I mean,
we had Bobby Green on Saturday saying, why is this boy speaking my name? Because once you put my name out there, I come find you. It's time. Jesus. This is the thing. All credit in the world to Paddy. Continued to build that unbeaten record in the UFC. Done what he's needed to do, regardless of what you think about the decision against Jared Gordon. He's 5-0. Done all the right things. Continued to grow his celebrity. Continued to grow his star power. But now it's time to start fighting the really good fighters. Now it's time to start facing those guys with numbers next to their name. And those guys aren't going to go away as easy as, you know, 97-year-old Tony Ferguson.
And I
who didn't even go away that easy.
He didn't, in fairness. I can't wait to see it. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Let's talk about welterweight. Because this is a division that's been on hiatus, it feels like, for the last 6 months or whatever. We had, obviously, Leon Edwards going in there and doing what he did against Kamaru Usman. We had, okay, Bilal Muhammad's the obvious next contender. Okay, that's going to be on maybe UFC 297, maybe 298. Okay, 300 number. And we still don't have it made. And 301 is coming up. 302 and 303 are made. What's happening with this fight? Where is this going? Obviously, they're going back to Manchester. Will it be on that? It probably will be, I suppose, Spencer. But God almighty, this has been dragged out for a long time, hasn't it?
I mean, it should have been booked last December. We would already be past it. We would be 4 months removed from it. This is the thing. It never made sense to me last March. So 13 months ago, when they rolled out Colby Covington as the backup and Dana got to the presser and said emphatically, he's next. None of us understood why. We end up getting that fight. It got delayed a little bit. It ends up in December. It's not a great fight. And Bilal's still sitting there. I feel bad every time I see Bilal at these pay-per-views and he's making the call me. He's holding up the 301, 302, 303, 304, whenever. He's done everything he needs to do. Just give him the opportunity. Just give him the fight. And I've written this, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Even if it's just to get it over with, sometimes you have to just do the fight that gets the guy out of the way. And that's not to say he can't beat Leon Edwards. He certainly could, but just do the fight and find out. Just do it and see. Ironically, that's essentially what happened with Leon Edwards. And now look where we are. So just book the damn fight so we can get going, because we've got Shavkat Rakhmonov hanging out, ready for his opportunity. we've got Jack Della Maddalena, who is an absolute psychopath and says, hey, I know I broke my arm and I just beat Gilbert Burns, but there's another dude that's undefeated in this division. Let me at him. I want that dude that nobody wants to face. We have Ian Machado Gary, who is still undefeated. So let's get rolling. Let's get moving. Book this fight. Do it in Manchester. Get it out of the way. See what happens when we're done with it and go from there.
Isn't it crazy the difference between like the contenders in each division and what they look like? Because like, we there's three guys at 3-0 in lightweight and then Paddy at 5-0. Ian Gary 7-0. Jack Della Maddalena 7-0. What's Rachmanov? He's probably, is Rachmanov 8-0 or what is he? I'm looking, he's 6-0, sorry, I was, but you know, injuries and stuff like that and being held back. They're lining up here. They're absolutely lining
Sean
up.
Sean Brady's 6-1. Michael Morales is outside of the rankings and 24 years old at 4-0. You know, Renat Fakhradinov is unbeaten in the UFC. Like there's bodies. We need to get moving forward. Book these fights.
Just get them done. Get them.
The easy things that make sense.
And I think, like, you make Rachmanov versus Jack Della Maddalena as well, I think. Like, Rachmanov, he's only had 6 fights as well. I know we look at the... It's funny because some people we look at the ability and in other people we don't look at the ability. You know, it's funny the way that works out. It's like, oh, his ability, just put him in there. And in other people are like, oh, we need to see him have 19 fights before he can get there type of thing. I think make that fight because it makes sense. The winner of that, look, give them the next title shot. And then, look, Colby's number 4 looks like he might be fighting Ian Gary. Then you have another one set up very easily. Like, it's, this division is probably the easiest division of all to match make. I think all the matchups from, apart from maybe Usman, but I like Usman at 185, maybe he won't, but I think they all kind of make a lot of sense in that division, and I think they should be made. Before we move on quickly, MVP, what did you think of him? Maybe Usman versus MVP is the fight, who knows, but I've always wanted MVP in the UFC. What did you think of his debut, and what do you think they do with him next?
It went about the way that I expected it to go. I think he's entertaining. I think he's a guy that is certainly going to connect with the audience. I've never been as big of a, oh my God, MVP is the greatest, as some people are. I think he's a very, very good fighter. I think it's unfortunate that he rolls into the UFC at age 36 as opposed to age 28 or 29. I think what you do next is you give us the Stephen Thompson fight. And let us have the, you know, high level sport karate entertainment. And then we see from there, if he goes out and he looks really great and beats Stephen Thompson, then we start pushing this towards contention. But for right now, beating Kevin Holland in a fight where Kevin Holland couldn't figure out the things to do and couldn't navigate the ways to potentially beat Michael Venom Page. Let's just do another fun fight. I would say 5-round. Main event on a fight night somewhere. Maybe you do it as the third fight of another big pay-per-view and give them another kind of spotlight. And then we'll decide from there. He looked good. He did what he needed to do. But before we start talking about title fights and wouldn't it be cool, Leon versus MVP, two British, we're not there. There's other people in line right now. He's in a different line.
I am the biggest MVP fan of all time, and I think what was right in there. Look, I've dreamt about Wonderboy versus MVP for a long time, but they did make good arguments as to why the fight shouldn't happen. It could be like an extremely boring fight. Like, what
it
would
could
love.
Be a terrible fight. Yeah.
Do you know what I like? I like MVP versus Gilbert Burns. I think that sure. makes a bit of sense.
Sure.
I think that maybe that's one you're making. You know, you vault him even further up there because you said at that age, if he beats Gilbert Burns, no one could deny him maybe one away from a title or whatever. So yeah. I think that maybe
MVP versus Joaquin Buckley looked good against Vicente Luque. I would see that because Buck is a guy that'll go out there and look to engage and can throw some stuff and put himself in some bad spots as well, potentially, and largely be a striking fight. But I'd take that Gilbert Burns fight. Absolutely.
Let's do it. Right. Middleweight. Middleweight's been a very interesting... Actually, I've skipped weight. I'll go to middleweight. That's okay. Been a very interesting division, as we know, over the last few years. We've talked about it an awful lot. The drama and the unexpected losses and the title changes have, I suppose, bred life into a division that maybe needed it, you know, with the drama and all like that. as I sat right watching the fights at the weekend, and Alex Pereira knocked out Jamal Hill, and they cut to Israel Adesanya there, and I think it's an interesting line for Adesanya, right? Because he lost his title after beating his greatest rival, and now that great rival has gone on to, and it's a weird thing to say, but like he's completely surpassed everything Adesanya has done now, which is a thing, I don't know, 8 months ago maybe we would have think, if you'd said that, it would have been ludicrous. I just wonder, when the mental side of the game gets you, you've lost your title to, you know, to a weirdo guy in Sean Strickland. Another guy you hate now has the title, and then the guy you hate the most has a title the weight class above, where you failed, and everyone he's talking about is one of the greatest fighters of all time. How, like, I've been watching The Walking Dead recently, and, you know, they've all been, like, gone mental at times and seeing people and just losing it. How is Israel Adesanya staying fucking mentally stable? He just can't be, Spencer.
So it's going to be one of two things. We're either going to see the absolute second coming, good Lord, this dude is locked in and wrecking fools, or we're going to see a string of not great performances because he's just in his head and can't get over the fact that he didn't turn up against Sean Strickland. And then Dricus du Plessis went out and won the title. And oh, by the way, the guy I knocked out a year ago, knocked Alex Pereira stiff and shot arrows into him a year ago, 53 weeks ago to be exact, is now wrecking shop up a division and like being celebrated for the rightfully, you know, transcendent, unprecedented talent that he is. If Izzy wants to do it, I think he can come back and just go on an absolute murder spree. Because he is that talented. He is that skilled.
100%.
It's just a matter of mentally, can you get there? Do you want to make that push again? I would lean towards he will. I think it's tough to see Alex Pereira getting the attention and acclaim and all of those things that he's getting when the last time you guys fought, you knocked him stiff. And now he's got gold. Du Plessis's got gold. You're two champions removed from the middleweight title in a year. And so hopefully he comes back locked all the way in, but we'll see.
I actually think he will. And I've had this strange thing about Adesanya for the last while. I actually think negativity is more of a positive for Adesanya than positivity is. Like when Adesanya got at his, you know, the highest ebb of his career, he went out there and like went to kind of close decisions and people leaving at fucking four rounds in and kind of, you know, not taking that next step to the stardom. But then when he's back against the wall after losing to Pereira, after getting sparked, he comes back and he wins, you know? And that's the mark of a man. That's a mark of a great fighter. And no one could ever question Adesanya's ability, but it's the mental side of it. And I just wonder, you know, I put it to you there, basically it's a negative mental side. But like some people thrive off negative mental issues in that way, in terms of like, as you said, back against the wall and I'm going to fucking fight out, as he literally did against Alex Pereira. So I think it's interesting. But with that said, is Du Plessis versus Adesanya going to be what's next, or do you think there's anything else that could happen there?
I think it's probably what's next because they've booked Whitaker Chimaev. And so I think timeline wise, in terms of what's on the schedule already, all of it obviously depends on health and everybody being ready. But I think it makes the most sense. It feels weird to bring the guy in that lost about two fights back to get the next title fight without getting a victory again. But this is just where we're at. Like, this is another one of those situations where just make the fight that makes sense. It doesn't have to be, because if you want to go with somebody that's coming off a win, we're moving several steps back, right? We're either waiting for Whitaker Chimaev to resolve itself, or we're waiting for Izzy to fight somebody, or we're going, man, I don't even know who the next in line that's coming off a win would be. Is it Brendan Allen?
Maybe, yeah.
And so, I mean, you could certainly do that if you wanted to, but that's not, no offense to either person in that one, but that's not generating buzz. bring Adesanya back and let him start beaking off about DDP and them getting at each other again. And we'll have a bunch of interest and we'll see where it's going. But just happy that middleweight is interesting now.
Yeah, and there is a few. Obviously, we saw about Nicola at the weekend. We touched on him earlier. We have Kyle Bahalio. Okay, Joe Pfeiffer took a setback, but I still think he's a good prospect, obviously, coming through. And, you know, Ali Askarov as well, and Ruzabayev. You know, there's a few guys coming through there, so I'm looking forward to seeing Christian Eri Duncan as well, even though, you know, he lost one, but he's on the way back to winning ways again. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Before we get to the top two divisions, let's look at the flyweight and the bantamweight divisions. Obviously, we have the flyweight title coming up here at the next pay-per-view. It's a division that I suppose has struggled over the last while because we had four title fights between the same two guys. We had Demetrius leaving. We had Henry Cejudo leaving. Now we have one of those two guys who was in the title fight. He's gone up a weight class as well. And then the other guy is just coming off of a loss. So of the four of the last five champions are gone, basically. And that's every champion ever. So that's there's going to be a void there, I suppose, in that division. Plus then you have, you know, you have Manel Cape just continually falling out of fights. You have, it feels like Kaikara France the same, maybe a little bit. Albazi was supposed to be the next guy in line, and then he fell out of a fight as well. And then, you know, a guy comes from nowhere in Steve Herceg, and he gets a title fight. And fair play to him, he's looked very good since he's come in there. The division, I love the flyweight division, I have for a long time. It's a mess at the moment, Spencer, isn't it? Can you make head or tail of it?
It is a bit of a mess. What I will say is, this is exactly what I'm talking about when it's just make the fight that's there. This, right, like Steve Herceg's coming off that terrific knockout of Machnell. He's 3-0 in the UFC. Just make the fight that makes sense. He's the guy that's active. He's the guy that's right there. I'm so glad. And this isn't a knock on Brandon Royval, but I'm so glad they didn't do the let's just run it back with Royval. We just saw that fight. Yes, he got a good victory. I don't need to see it again inside of a year. Give it some time to breathe. Let him get another win, maybe two wins. Let somebody else that's on the come up get an opportunity. Ursig's coming off that performance. It makes complete sense. We do need, however, Manel Cape to stop being unserious. We need Kaikara France to get back. We need Muhammad Makhachev to get one more opportunity against somebody up in that upper echelon. We need Tetsuro Taira to get one of those opportunities as well. And then we'll start getting there. Because there is talent in the division. We need Amir Albazi to get healthy and get back as well. I'm glad Brendan Moreno is taking some time away. I think that's smart. I think it's needed. I think it's necessary. And I give him all the credit in the world for identifying that that's what he needed to do. But I like that they're doing the Ursig fight against Pantoja because it just keeps the champion active. It's a new matchup. It's the right guy that makes sense. This, to me, is the flyweight version of Bilal having done enough to get his shot. Just do it. Just make the fight that's right there, and we'll see what happens. Steve Ursig could go out there and beat Alexandre Pantoja because he's infinitely better than most people understand. And we're going to see that on the biggest stage in a championship fight. I love it.
And I think it's interesting as well with the flyweight division. This is a division that's only going to get better and better because we have to remember we're not too far away from this division basically being dead, and flyweight's like giving up on the sport or, you know, getting caught and things like that. We're only a few years out from that. And I was talking to Ian actually on a podcast, it'll be out just before this, and he was saying to me like the level of flyweights coming through in Irish MMA is so high, and that's a thing you wouldn't notice unless it was an absolute trend, you know. And I'm sure it's the same in the US or in Canada or in Brazil or whatever. There's a lot of flyweights re-emerging now, maybe, or taking that next step. And I feel like, you know, 2025, 2026, 2027 is going to be a good time for the flyweights. We just have to maybe get through where we are right now. But having said that as well, you know, we talked about Pantoja the last time we did this show, and we both kind of agreed at that time that, like, he's okay, he's not the sexiest name, he's a good fighter, maybe not the best fighter in that division, and maybe he won't hold on to that too long, but there are so many good guys, even young guys coming through. Maybe it's even Urseg. He's looked great, like, let's be honest. Makhachev, people have been down a bit on Makhachev, but, like, Makhachev is only young and it's a bit unfair, and he's coming off of injury soon, and, you know, people are saying he's not ready for the title shot. But it's funny, if he's a, you know, if Pantoja wasn't champion and a match made him against Pantoja, people would say, oh yeah, that's a good test for him, you know, which is kind of funny. But I'm at the same time, I'm kind of glad that they held him back for this. But the flyweight division is one of those divisions, I would think, don't look at it now, look at it in 2 years time and see how it'll be then. The bantamweight division is the other side of it. You can look at it now and see how fucking amazing it is. It's funny that I kind of put the featherweight and the lightweight division together, whereas a few weeks ago it was very much the bantamweight division and the featherweight division I was putting together, because I know everyone hates the super fight straight away, but I love O'Malley versus Topuria. Oh my, just as a fight, I don't care about weight classes, and if you're to give me the, oh, I love it. But I also love O'Malley versus Dashvili. Like, what a fucking fight that is. What a test. Honestly, I think, like, Sean O'Malley, I've taken not a U-turn on O'Malley, but I was a bit hesitant to put O'Malley over for a while, but I've very much changed that stance now. I think he's a top fighter, and look, I'd probably pick against him in both of those fights I just mentioned, to be honest, but that doesn't make a difference. Look at Max Holloway, he lost a few fights, still a top fighter. It's not all about wins and losses, but at the same time, Jesus, the options you have for a UFC matchmaker there, it doesn't get much easier than this. Toss of a coin, give me one of them and it's fucking brilliant. I'm gonna make an assumption here, or I guess you want Dashvili next, is that right?
Oh, he has to be. And everybody said it, and I think that's where we're going again. Make the fight that's right there. It should have been Merab when Chito got the opportunity. I understand why they went the way they went. I also was pretty confident that the fight was going to go the way the fight went. And so Merab's there. Make the fight. Get it signed. Again, whether it's International Fight Week or August, whatever it's going to be, get it done. That's the fight that makes sense. And then once we know that for sure, and I think even now that it's not official, but we all assume it is, it's penciled in, let's just start booking these fights. Let's just start getting everybody else lined up, figuring out what we're doing with Corey Sandhagen, figuring out if Henry Cejudo's sticking around. Let's just get going, because there's talent. It's always an entertaining fight when it's two guys from 35. Just start booking them. Just let's go. Get Cousin Umar back in there again so that he's not taking another year off. Let's go.
Jose Aldo on his way back as well.
See, I think that's a one-off.
Do you think so? Yeah, I saw a few people.
I think that's a one-off. If he goes out, I think win or lose, it's a let me go out and have my farewell, my swan song in Rio at home.
And who deserves it more, I suppose, in fairness? I mean, 100%.
And if not, great. I'm happy to have him back, but that would be my guess, is I'm coming to do one more, hopefully beat Jonathan Martinez, run into the crowd and just keep running.
Start putting on the Fast and the Furious music as he tails off. But yeah, look, there's so much talent in that division. So, like, Rinya Nakamura, I know Harry's big on him as well. I really like him. We have obviously Farid Basharat, you know, Caelan Loughran's after getting a win there, and obviously he's on the way up. Peyton Talbot, God almighty, Peyton Talbot. Oh, Lord, that's championship that
boy,
material
that,
there.
That boy good.
Oh, he good. Oh, he very, very
that
good.
That boy good.
So
you can tease him for whatever you want to tease him about, internet. Go nuts. He don't give a shit, and he's good. So you're going to see a lot of that, dude.
That's the name. That's it's sometimes you just see a guy and go, oh, okay. I understand. And, you know, I think I tweeted, I goes, that's championship potential. And there's some, oh, he's never fought anyone. He's not done anything. It doesn't matter. Like, sometimes you see a guy and you're like, okay, that is the guy. And look, we've all seen it with Habib, I suppose. And, you know, some of us saw it with, you know, Jamal Hill or McGregor or John Jones or whoever it might have been. But and it's weird, you know, Peyton Talbot. Like, maybe I'm going a little bit overboard there, putting him in there, but still, we're not always right either, you know. We're not always right, but
yeah, he may not get there, but for a 25-year-old that has the limited number of fights he has, to have had the two performances he's had and to have the mindset and composure that he has in there, it ticks all the boxes. And so you're 100% right. Not to put him in with, you know, all-time greats, but to say that the room is there at the highest end, if he reaches every ounce of what he could be that. And I think it's okay to say that. It's okay to be excited about people.
Yes.
We don't have to do the like, oh, well, he's never. The best thing about this sport, and I say it all the time with people now, you know what? He's going to fight people and we're going to find out.
Yes.
And it's going to be great. He's going to win or he's going to lose and we're going to sort it out. And so, yep, we may be crazy and he may lose his next one and two more and then get bounced. 3 years from now, he might have gold on his shoulder. Going to be fun to see no matter what.
Yeah. And it's funny though, because like we equally see some guys coming through and they're like, they might go on a run or they might win a few fights. And they're thinking like, no, just that's not going to happen for that guy. And yeah, sometimes you have to say that too. But like, that's it though too. Like you have to, if you're in our position, like, you know, I've said about Paddy Pimblett many times and I don't think he's going to get there to the very top. And it's equally as hard to say that as it is to say, I think this guy will get to the very top, because you're going out in a limb either way, you know. And to be honest, if Paddy Pimblett did go to the very top, I'd be absolutely delighted, because I like Paddy. I think he's, you know, even though he's from Liverpool, I think he's a great character and I don't think there's much harm in him and all of that. But yeah, anyway, let's talk about light heavyweight. Go on, do you have something else
to add? Just one last, I was just going to say, the thing to me to add to that I always sort of hold myself to is whether they get there or not, like, it's okay to not get there. Mm-hmm. It's okay to still be excited about somebody that tops out at being the eighth best fighter in the bantamweight division. Song Yadong may not ever be a champion. Do you know who I want to see fight every single time he decides to go into the octagon? Song Yadong. Tons of fun.
Look at Jim
it's
Miller.
It's okay to be these guys. Jim, yeah. Jim fucking Miller. Bobby perfect Green. Example.
Joel
never Ozan. Got there.
Yeah. Diego Sanchez. There's so many fighters that I've loved down through the years. Alexander Gustafsson, you know.
Yep.
Daniel Cormier.
It's okay.
You know, so many fighters like that. 100 years who are never the best, but you'd still look forward to, you know, Jared Cannonier.
The so man won many. Two titles.
did he though? How many times did the champion at heavyweight beat him? Twice, was it? Yeah.
I mean, sure, yeah.
How many times did John Jones
won
beat him
two
twice?
Titles.
Did he really? You know, kind of. He's what is he? He's what is it? 4-2, 4-2-4 against UFC champions or something like that in championship fights. Yeah. Not great. No. Anyway, speaking of former or actual light heavyweight champions here, what did they do with Alex Pereira next? Because I understand, I don't really want to see him go into heavyweight unless it is either John Jones or Aspinall or Stipe, whoever. Becomes the winner of that trio, I'd love to see him going up and testing himself and fighting either of those, win or lose. I don't want to see the real champion fighting an interim champion. I do not want to see that, even though that would be a fun fight, but still. But also at light heavyweight, like, who is really next there? Like, do you want to see him fight fucking Mohamed Ankalaev? Not really. I mean, you like Ankalaev.
I do.
You do, yeah.
I do.
I don't.
Because it's another one of those, just do it. Just make the goddamn fight. And like, look.
Yeah.
Ankalaev has some tools that could present problems, that could present challenges, right? Very good wrestler. Very good top game. Good at controlling. Good at chain wrestling. Good in the clinch. All of those things. He also could very well have his 12 fight unbeaten streak snapped in about 3 minutes tops, because the guy with the death touch is going to be standing across from him and battering his leg. And if Jan Błachowicz can take him down to have it one wheel, Alex Pereira will sure as hell put him on no limbs and then send him to the shadow realm. And so I think you do that and let heavyweight sort itself out, because I love the idea of at some point him going and trying it. I did a big piece on him for Fighters Only this month, spoke with Glover and said, you know, when he shows up at the gym, could you have expected this? He was like, two divisions? No. And now you guys are talking about three. I was like, what do you think about three? And he was like, I always told him when he was at middleweight, I want to see you just try light heavyweight, because I think that's actually the right weight class for you. I said, I agree. Worked out well, made the right choices. And he kind of chuckled and was like, and so now I kind of want to see heavyweight. And so I'm in the same boat, Glover. I kind of just want to see it.
Yeah.
He's relatively the same size as Tom Aspinall. I think Tom presents a bunch of challenges. I think that's a terrific fight. Let's get heavyweight sorted out. Let's get to somebody having an undisputed title. Have Alex Pereira defend the light heavyweight belt a couple times. Get some of these dudes out of the way. And then next year we can investigate the possibility of a three-weight world champion.
I want to see Alex Pereira against Khalil Roundtree. That's what I want to see. That's
fine. I would certainly be on board with that.
I'd watch that.
I would like to see Khalil Roundtree fight Jiří Prochazka.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's a great fight.
As a like contender fight. Because I don't need Prochazka getting circled in right away. He just lost in November.
100%.
He's got one win. Let's put another couple fights in between it. They're going to be fun. They're going to be wild. And if it's Khalil Roundtree, oh good God, it's going to be violent.
And as I always say with past champions, I don't want to see him going to the back of the line. I just want to see him go to third in line. You know, right. So let's right. do that.
He doesn't have to win 7 fights to get there.
Yes.
But he should have to win more than one.
Indeed. Do you know the one thing about Ankalaev as well? And maybe I'm telling myself here, I think he probably beat Pereira. That's why I'm kind of worried about it as well. So we'll see on that.
On his best night, when he's his best self,
yeah.
I think he certainly could. Mm-hmm. But he's very much somebody that can turn up and...
Yeah, it doesn't always
turn up. You know.
Yeah, that's very true.
Have a weird night and not be as dialed in and as focused as he should be and get... Right, like absolutely obliterating Ireland's finest Johnny Walker and then throws the most clearly illegal knee we've seen in quite some time just because it's an absolute brain cramp, poor IQ decision-making. And so we could see... that version of the guy that didn't wrestle against Jan Błachowicz until it got to the point that he absolutely had to and then looked great. So certainly could be a test, but could also get lamped in about 90 seconds.
Yeah. And there, like we look at the rest of that division, there isn't, you know, we have Azamat Murazanov, Vitor Petrino, who are two good guys coming through, but there isn't a whole lot more that I'm seeing anyway, you know, and it's tough. It's tough in that division, but hopefully someone will emerge. Let's talk about heavyweight. Any notion when John Jones is coming back? Is it going to be 304, 305? Is it going to be this year? They're going to still make the Stipe match, obviously. Any idea when that's going to happen?
Not official, not hearing from anybody. Just my guess would be, you know, that July pay-per-view, late July. That feels like the right time. It has to be. July or August. One of those. And if it, to me, it's one of those things where if it doesn't come together this summer, we got to just move on. We got to just, away we go. And who knows? John always finds a way to turn up in the news when he's not turning up in the news for good reasons. And so if that's the one we're holding out for, then by golly, we got to get it booked quick and get it in and done and move forward because we're starting to get into that. We've been sitting around. This is starting to feel like Connor and Chandler, where we're sitting around for 2 years waiting for it to happen, and the excitement about it is waning by the day.
I will never understand why they made that interim title. Like, you made an interim title to have one of your most exciting heavyweights just sit out for like ages. Just why is that title not being defended? Like, why isn't he fighting Gagne? Why isn't he fighting Blades or whoever it might be?
I mean, I think he probably will.
Hopefully, but like he should be on his second defense by now. That's what I think. You have a young, exciting heavyweight. Like, and I've said this before, but like, make him that young, exciting heavyweight. Like, let's be honest, John Jones is the toughest matchup there for everyone. Still, there's guys that Tom Aspinall could pick off in there, man. You know, maybe Gagne or Blades aren't that, but like. You could have thrown him in there with Jailton. That's not going to happen now, or someone else, even a short notice type of thing. But I don't know. It's such an odd thing. But at the same time, like, and although I think it's waned a little bit, like this Aspinall as the greatest fighter to ever live thing has just been building and building and building. I did predict that it would wane a little bit, and I actually think it has waned a little bit. But this division is so frustrating, because it felt like say someone like an Almeida, the run he was on, if the division hadn't been held up, he probably would have been in a massive fight at the top of it. Now, like, who did he lose? I can't. Was it Curtis Blades? He
lost
kinda,
to Curtis Blades.
Yeah, he kind of just fades into the background there, you know. And I don't know. That's the exact opposite of what you want at heavyweight. So, I think you're right that we need to move past it. And I understand why they're doing Jones and Miocic, and I have really not enjoyed the level of disrespect that Stipe Miocic has gotten from commentators, I suppose, and not literal commentators, but like commentators of the sport, or on the sport even, over the last while. Because I've no problem with this matchmaking, to be honest. I think it's everything that's got around it that is the weird part of it, and the Jones injury obviously kind of fucked it up as well. But yeah, just get that fight done, as you said, and then move on. Anything else in heavyweight we should be looking forward to, we should be excited about, Spencer? Because it's been tough over the last while, hasn't it?
It has been, and I think the stagnation at the top of the division has led to sort of what always seems to happen in these situations. We get some of these guys that just get picked off because they do have to keep fighting. And from that end, I understand Tom Aspinall's hesitancy to go out and want to defend that title, because that belt, whether it should have been created or not, is usually a golden ticket to a championship opportunity. Beat a guy that nobody wanted to fight, did it on short notice with a bad back. So he should, in some regard, understandably, want to hold his place in line. I also know in talking to him that he's a competitor and he wants to fight. And so if I were him, I would be out there saying, okay, Curtis Blades, come on back across the pond. We'll do this again. I'll put my belt on the line. It's going to be more than 15 seconds. I'm not going to blow out my knee, and we're going to see what's up. Because that's the smart fight to me in terms of defending that belt. I think he could do Ciryl Gane as well. I would pick him to win that fight as well. But Gane doesn't, I don't know what the scoop is. He hasn't fought since September, and that was a good but not great performance against Sergey Spivak. I said at the time, if I were him, I'd have been trying to get back as quickly as possible and just keep rebuilding, because he needed to rebuild a little bit. But we've lost Jailton Almeida, as you said. Sergey Pavlovich has now caught that loss that gets him moving backwards. Alexander Romanov didn't become the guy that we expected or wanted him to be, and sort of the next wave of guys, there hasn't been anybody yet that gives you that real sense of, ooh, this is a guy, right? We don't have a Peyton Talbot at heavyweight.
We've won.
We have won. Are you going to give me Rebelis Despaigne?
I am. I'm on that bandwagon straight.
I mean,
away.
I'm interested. Like, yeah. Listen, you go moving backwards and knocking dudes out, I'm all in. I'm paying attention. I like that he's making a relatively quick turnaround. I think he absolutely pastes Waldo Cortez Acosta, but I think there's a ceiling on a 37-year-old that's just getting into it and is a little sloppy in his technique and things like that, that eventually somebody comes along and double legs him, and then we're seeing where things are at. But I'm going to be excited the whole way through.
Me too.
And listen, Mick Parkin has looked good. Oh, he's a 28-year-old kid, mm-hmm. works with a great group of people in Big Phil and Tom and some of those lads. And so give him time, certainly at 28. He's got 20 more years in the heavyweight division to compete.
At least.
Like, let's just see. But there hasn't been that person that you're like, okay, everybody hold up, this is certainly a guy. We'll see what happens. But, you know, we gotta get the top end of things moving and sort it out so we can continue going forward.
Indeed. And even if we do, there's no guarantee John Jones won't just sit out for another year and then retire, you know? So, and the same with Stipe if he wins, to be honest. So,
if Stipe wins, he's out. Like, win or lose, this is Stipe Miocic's last fight. He ain't sticking around for any of this.
Probably not, unless it's a rematch with John Jones, maybe.
Maybe, but
I could also be looking at Pereira.
If you get a win and you could go out on top beating the guy that they call the GOAT, are you going to give him a second fight?
Yeah, nah, a lot of money. Like.
Depending on the size of the bag.
It's interesting. And I'm happy for Stipe, to be honest. I'll say it again, I don't like the way Stipe Miocic has been talked about over the last while. I really don't like it. Like, I think, and we've had this discussion before, but you know, the history of our sport is sometimes so denigrated by like new people talking about it and like not respecting the old fighters. And like, if you have more respect for Tom Aspinall than Stipe Miocic, please, you know, take 3 steps backwards and go fuck yourself. To be honest, like Stipe Miocic deserves an unbelievable amount of respect. And so does Aspinall. Now, don't get me wrong, but like, he hasn't achieved anything. And maybe he will. Maybe he'll be the greatest heavyweight of all time. But Stipe Miocic is the greatest heavyweight of all time. And let's give some fucking respect to the man. But yeah, that's my last rant.
Well said.
Right, Spencer, that's it. I think we've gone through every division. I did forget about a couple in the middle, but we got through it. Any names, any people, anything in any divisions I forgot, anyone you want to mention? Because there are surely a lot of names there and a lot of contenders and a lot of things, and we probably did leave out something, but it's a great time for you. See, anything I forgot, Spencer?
I mean, I think we kind of touched on most of them. I wrote a thing prior to a couple of weeks back, prior to UFC 300 for OSDB Sports, kind of recapping the first quarter of the year. And it's just been a really fun year. It's been a really good year so far. I think the level of talent and the level of fights that we've got have been really entertaining for the most part. And so for me, it's just looking forward to this continuing and looking forward to the names that surprise us, the people that suddenly turn up and look really good and become the 2024 kind of Diego Lopez's, or become this year's, you know, newcomer that gives us that, ooh, who's this guy? What could they become? Who's this woman? What could she get up to? And I think we're going to see some people continue to emerge that have been good. I think we're going to see some people that surprisingly fall off, and I'm here for all of it.
And one last name, Amanda Nunes. Do you think she'll come back? Could she with Kayla Harris now there as well? Because we didn't mention her earlier on. And, you know, she is the GOAT as well and deserves an awful lot of respect. Like, she's been talking the talk over the last while. And I think she might sit out, see how the dice roll and come back then. But I don't know. What's your feeling on it?
I think she could. I don't think she should. I think you've done what you've done. Just stay at home. You've got a beautiful daughter. You've got two beautiful daughters, a lovely family that's growing. Yes, I know Kayla is out there and you were waiting to hear her call your name, and the back and forth between them based on that, and shouts to our guy, Aaron Bronsetter, for wisely just showing Kayla the video right away and Kayla delivering the like, well, you're retired. That's why I didn't call your name, baby. You want to come back? Come on back. Like, sure, we could do it. I don't know that you need to. I don't know that, again, it's similar to the Stipe thing, right? If you beat John Jones, just leave after beating John Jones. It doesn't get any higher than that. You come back off the shelf after 18 months, 2 years, whatever it is. Harry said this when we were talking earlier in the day. It's a different life when you've been hanging out on the couch for 18 months, being a mom, not training necessarily the way you were throughout your career. To come back and fight that lady that wants to prove herself, that wants to make a point, and is hungry and is dialed in, I think you just sit at home and say, I'm already the GOAT. I'm good.
I think that's probably a wise decision, especially considering she didn't look exactly amazing in her last couple of fights. So I think that's probably the way to do it. All right, Spencer, that's it. We got you. I every time we do this, I enjoy it thoroughly, and I know the listeners do as well. Tell the people where to find you. I know you OSDB Sports, UFC.com, Fighters Only Sports. Jesus that's Christ. It.
Those are the four.
Leave a few jobs for someone else.
I got four jobs.
I need a few more jobs. Like, give me one or two of them. Like, you know,
I got four jobs, and all of the work gets pimped out and hoard out on social media at Spencer Kite, both Twitter and Instagram. I don't know how to use TikTok. I'm too old for it. But those two spots, we send it out when I can get around to doing it. But this is always fun, man. As I said yesterday, and as I will say every time, you want to do one of these, I'm always in.
Beautiful. I appreciate it, Spencer. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you to everybody for listening. And we'll see you next week. Good luck.